I want you to imagine, just for a second, that you were suspended inside a massive roaring wall of water. Like you're completely surrounded by thousands of tons of deep green ocean. And it's curving over your head like this, I mean, like a cathedral made of glass.
It's a terrifying thought, honestly. Just maximum physical intensity.
Right, exactly. The sheer power around you is enough to crush a car. The noise is absolutely deafening, and the pressure is just unbelievable. And yet, right there, right in the center of that violent, churning chaos, there is, well, there's total, absolute inner silence.
Yeah, it feels like an impossible contradiction, you know? You're positioned at the exact point of the highest external volume, but also somehow the highest internal quiet. The physical world is just screaming, but the mind is completely still.
Yes, and that specific contradiction, that's our mission for today's deep dive. Yeah. We are exploring this really stunning watercolor painting. It's titled Cat Surfer by the artist Jero Duque. We're going to unpack how a single frozen image of an extreme sport actually transforms into a profound philosophical statement about how we inhabit the world.
And honestly, trust me, by the time we're done looking at this piece, you are going to see your own daily chaos in a completely different light.
Oh, absolutely. So, okay, let's unpack this. Our source material today is incredibly rich. We have the painting itself, obviously, but we also have its technical specifications. The artist refers to this in the source text as the ficha technica.
Right, the technical sheet.
Yeah, I like to think of the ficha technica as like the engineering schematics for the artwork. It tells us exactly what materials were used to build this illusion. And finally, we have this in-depth artistic analysis drawn from the context of a book titled Trastio.
Which really helps us frame the emotional core of the piece.
Exactly. But before we look at a single brushstroke or talk about paint, we have to talk about where this image actually came from. We need to ground this in the, well, the real lived human experience of the person in the water.
Right, because an image like this doesn't just spring from pure, you know, detached imagination. It's rooted in a very specific physical reality that someone actually had to survive.
Yeah, and the backstory here is what hooked me immediately. The surfer in this image isn't just some anonymous model or a stock photo figure. His name is Catlin Hanley. And at the time the reference photograph was taken, he was a young guy, approximately 25 years old.
Wow, 25.
Yeah. And this photograph was snapped in Maui, Hawaii, which is crucial because he wasn't just, you know, passing through on a vacation. He actually lived there for several years.
And that lived experience changes the entire context of the image, doesn't it? He's not a tourist just dropping in for a weekend thrill. I mean, he's someone who has spent years observing, understanding, and physically adapting to those specific, incredibly powerful Hawaiian waves.
Right.
The ocean there has a unique signature, like a unique weight to it, and he knows it intimately.
Exactly. So Catlin takes this photograph of himself deep inside this massive wave, and he supplies it to the artist, Jero Duque. Duque then uses it as the foundational reference to make the watercolor. But when you look at that ficha technica, those engineering schematics, there's a detail that I just cannot get over.
What's that?
Duque did not paint this sitting on the warm sand in Maui. When referring to the technical specs, we have to clarify that Whittier, California is the location of his studio where he works on his paintings. He painted it there in Whittier in July of 2022.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a huge shift.
Right. And it was later exhibited at Art Boxy Andy Art in Athens, Greece in July 2024. But let's just focus on that California studio for a second.
It represents a massive environmental and psychological shift. I mean, you're moving from the primal, roaring coastline of Hawaii to an enclosed, dry room in California.
And to me, that sounds like a recipe for disaster. You take a photograph of a 25-year-old guy riding absolute kinetic chaos in the Pacific Ocean, and you transfer it into the quiet, highly controlled, static environment of an art studio in Whittier. Like, how do you do that without the image dying on the page?
It's a huge risk.
It feels like trying to walk a tightrope without a net. You can't just muscle your way across and force the ocean onto the paper. Mm-hmm. If you tense up and try to dominate the medium, you just fall. You lose the energy. So how do you absorb all that wild sway and make it hold still on paper?
Well, the way he does it is by entirely shifting the focus of the narrative. The artist, Jero Duque, doesn't try to capture the energy by freezing the surfer in some dramatic, heroic pose.
Okay, so what does he do?
He achieves that energy capture by making the water the undeniable, overwhelming protagonist of the painting. The human is secondary.
Oh, you see that instantly in the composition. The moment you look at the piece, you notice it's highly diagonal. And diagonal lines in visual art are inherently unstable. They suggest movement, sliding, falling. They create this tension in our brains.
Exactly. Yeah.
The massive wave takes up almost the entire plane of the paper. The analysis from Trastio describes it beautifully, calling the wave living architecture that wraps around and just swallows the surfer.
Right, and look at where the surfer is actually placed within that architecture. He's situated way down in the lower third of the painting. He acts purely as a human scale. I mean, he's small, precise, and perfectly balanced against this colossal non-human force.
Wait, but doesn't placing him down at the bottom, making him so tiny compared to the wave, doesn't that risk making him look weak?
Right.
Like he's about to be crushed? Usually in our media, if a human is tiny and the environment is huge, it's basically a tragedy waiting to happen.
You'd think so, yeah. If we were viewing this through the typical man versus nature lens that totally dominates Western storytelling, we are culturally conditioned to expect a fight, right? It's conquering the mountain, beating the storm, dominating the beast.
Right, the whole hero narrative.
Exactly. But this visual choice, shrinking the human, expanding the wave, it completely displaces the focus from human dominance. It underlines that there is no antagonism here between the subject and the environment. It is an alliance.
An alliance. Oh, I like that. So he's not wrestling the ocean. He's dancing with it.
The text explicitly points this out. The surfer does not dominate the wave. He inhabits it. He's a guest in that living architecture.
I love that concept of inhabiting rather than dominating. The body doesn't fight. It dialogues with the environment. But I have to admit, as I was reading this analysis, I kept hitting a wall regarding the medium itself.
Really? Why?
Well, how exactly does a puddle of colored water on a piece of paper make you actually feel that cold, rushing, massive exchange? Like, how does paint convey physical temperature and speed?
Okay, so to understand that, we have to open up that feature technica you mentioned earlier. The mechanics of mood in this piece are directly tied to the physical chemistry of the materials Jairo Duque chose to use.
Let's dive into those specs then. So the painting is a 15 by 11 inch format. Duke used Daniel Smith paints on Arches 300 gram, cold pressed, rough grain paper. Now, to a lot of people listening, that probably just sounds like a generic shopping list from an art supply store.
Sure, but those choices are practically a matter of life and death for the success of this artwork. Let's break them down, starting with the color. The central expressive axis of this painting relies heavily on the specific pigments.
Okay, so the greens.
Right. We are looking at these incredibly deep greens of the wave, which are carefully modulated with blues and foamy whites. Those particular cool tones transmit visual density and this incredible speed. They trigger a psychological response in the viewer that registers as palpable freshness.
Wow. Okay. And because he used watercolor rather than, say, heavy oil paint, you get that natural transparency. But how does that transparency actually work on a mechanical level to create the illusion of an ocean?
Well, think of the white paper underneath the paint as a light bulb.
A light bulb?
Yeah. In watercolor, the pigment particles are suspended in a transparent binder. When you lay down those deep Daniel Smith greens, the ambient light in the room actually passes through the layers of paint, hits the white paper underneath, and bounces back into your eye.
Oh, wow. So it's actively reflecting light.
Exactly. It creates genuine optical depth. It doesn't look like a flat, opaque paste sitting on a canvas. It looks like light filtering through thousands of gallons of translucent moving salt water.
That perfectly explains the depth of the water, yeah. But what about the violence of it? The white water, the splashes, the foam? The analysis from Trastio points out something really poetic about how the artist handled the foam, calling it the breathing of the water.
This is where that 300-gram rough grain taper becomes a crucial tool, because in traditional watercolor, you typically do not use white paint at all.
Wait, really? No white paint?
No, instead you leave parts of the paper completely untouched. These are called white reserves.
But wait, so you're saying he deliberately left patches of the paper totally blank to represent the water breathing? Doesn't that just look unfinished? I mean, if I leave a patch of canvas blank, my brain just sees an incomplete painting. How does our brain translate empty paper into a living, breathing ocean spray?
This is the magic of the rough grain texture. Think of that 300-gram paper like a microscopic mountain range. When the artist drags a brush loaded with pigment across that surface quickly, the paint catches only on the peaks of those microscopic mountains, but it skips entirely over the valleys. The valleys stay pure white.
Oh, I see. So it creates a broken organic texture automatically. The paper itself is doing half the work of creating the illusion of sea foam.
Exactly. It's exactly the opposite of a flat, smooth surface. Those white reserves, those skip valleys, they aren't just decorative add-ons, they are structural. They allow the painting to literally breathe visually, breaking up the heavy, dense greens. The physical technique perfectly matches the chaotic, aerated subject matter.
That is so wild. I mean, if you ever tried to paint your living room, you know how stressful it is to fix a drip on the wall. Now imagine that drip is intentional, and if you touch it or overwork it, the whole illusion is ruined because you can't just paint over it with white.
Yeah, there's no going back.
That's the high wire act Duke is performing here. Watercolor is notoriously unforgiving. You drag the brush a little too hard or let the water pool too long, and it just turns into mud.
And the author of the analysis draws a brilliant parallel here. The medium of watercolor is being used in its most physical, vulnerable dimension. We see the stains, we see the rapid drags of the brush, we see those unpainted white reserves. The painting takes immense physical risks to exist at all. Jairo Duque has to maintain what the text calls a controlled fluidity.
Controlled fluidity. And that is exactly what the 25-year-old Catlin Hanley was doing in the water in Maui.
You nailed it. The physical act of painting the watercolor directly mirrors the risky, fluid, split-second act of surfing the wave. The artist has to read the moisture on the paper the exact same way the surfer has to read the swell of the ocean.
That is amazing.
Right. That deep structural correspondence between the behavior of the medium and the behavior of the subject, it just strengthens the entire emotional impact of the work.
It really does. So let's zoom back in on that tiny figure of Catlin Hanley, because this is where the painting transitions from an impressive technical feat into a genuine philosophical statement.
Yeah. Let's analyze how the human is rendered visually. There's a stark contrast between the surfer's dark wetsuit and the luminous, glowing green of the sea around him.
It's a heavy contrast, but it doesn't isolate him from the environment. The Triestio text points out that he is a distinct figure, but there is no rupture. He belongs in that space. He isn't violently cutting through it.
Look at the style of the drawing itself. It is highly synthetic and functional.
When we say synthetic in this art context, we mean stripped down to its absolute essentials, right? Like no extra noise.
Yes, okay. Exactly. There is no unnecessary detail weighing down the human figure. You aren't looking at the expression on his face. You aren't looking at a brand logo on his wetsuit or the intricate design of the surfboard. You are only looking at gesture, posture, and pure intention.
You can see it in the flexion of his legs, the slight calculated tilt of his torso, the exact balanced positioning of his arms. I mean, every single drawn line communicates hyper-focused attention and total physical control.
And that extreme economy of line reveals something vital. It shows you that this surfer possesses immense body awareness. This isn't luck. It's acquired experience from those years living in Maui.
Right. You can't fake that.
No, you cannot fake that posture. The artist captured the muscle memory of someone who knows exactly how to exist inside a hostile environment.
And this is where the author of the analysis makes a profound claim that really stopped me in my tracks. He states that cat surfer is not just a pretty image of an extreme sport. It is a fundamental affirmation of life.
Which is huge. Think about the typical adrenaline junkie narrative we assign to extreme sports. The macho heroism, the conquering of fear. This painting strips all of that away entirely. It portrays surfing as a deeply sensitive practice of expanded awareness. It is a rare space where the human body literally has to learn to read the natural world and then inscribe itself into that world without violence.
Without violence. That phrase from the text is just so incredibly powerful. His physical body, the fiberglass board, the rushing water. It all operates on what the author calls an ethic of balance. It elevates the surfer from merely being an athletic competitor to being this highly sensitive, attuned organism in perfect equilibrium with its surroundings.
Which perfectly brings us to the broader cultural context of where this analysis lives within the book Triestio.
Yeah, in that book, this piece is placed in dialogue with other sea and beach scenes. But the author argues it's doing something very specific and very urgent for the viewer.
It serves as a direct, unapologetic counterpoint to modernity. If you think about the world we live in today, especially the world outside that quiet Whittier studio.
It's convulsed. It is relentlessly loud. I mean, We are constantly bombarded by notifications, news cycles, endless demands on our attention.
Exactly. Modernity is defined by that noise, by breakneck speed, by environmental destruction, and by this constant grinding friction. We are always fighting against our environment or our circumstances.
But the author insists that looking at this painting is not a form of escapism. It's not just a pretty picture of Hawaii to help you ignore your email inbox or forget about the news. Instead, it proposes a radical alternative way to inhabit reality.
Yes. In the face of all that modern noise and destruction, the act of surfing, and by extension, the careful, controlled act of painting this watercolor, it champions presence. It demands absolute, undivided attention and this deep, humbling respect for forces larger than yourself.
The artist Jero Duque assumes this painting as a celebration of life in its most elemental, stripped-down state. Just a human, a wave, and a single, fleeting instant of absolute harmony. And declaring that harmony, actively claiming that space of inner silence when the whole world outside is roaring, the text argues that this is actually a profound form of resistance.
It really is. Finding harmony is an act of rebellion in a convulsed world. Refusing to fight the wave and choosing to flow with it is a rejection of modern anxiety. And the painting works so well because its philosophy of balance, its diagonal composition, and its risky fluid watercolor technique are all perfectly aligned to deliver that message without ever feeling like a lecture or some empty spectacle.
It's just so cohesive.
Yeah.
It has been an incredible journey tracking this image. I mean, we started with a raw photograph of a 25-year-old Catlin Hanley surviving the massive kinetic waves of Maui, Hawaii. We followed that image to Jero Duque's quiet, dry studio in Whittier, California, where it was meticulously translated onto rough grain paper using this high-wire act of watercolor. And finally, we followed it to an exhibition in Athens, Greece, where it stands as a masterclass in how composition and raw materials can capture the perfect silent harmony between a fragile human and a colossal force of nature.
And for you listening, the emotional connection here goes far beyond just art appreciation. You do not need to own a surf gourd or book a flight to Maui to practice this ethic of balance.
Not at all. We are all navigating our own versions of that massive wall of water.
Absolutely. The lessons embedded in Cat Surfer apply to whatever chaos you're facing today. The demand for acute presence, the respect for your immediate environment, and the wisdom of flowing with massive, unavoidable forces rather than constantly tensing up and fighting them, those are survival tools for everyday life.
We all have massive waves crashing around us every single day. Waves of responsibility, waves of information, waves of stress and chaos. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today as you unplug and go back out into that noise. Think about your own daily life and the pressures you face. What does your personal surfboard look like? And more importantly, how can you stop exhausting yourself by fighting the 10,000-ton wave and instead learn to quietly inhabit the tube?